Blog Talk Radio.
My name is F.N. Wright. I'm calling this CD The Home Recordings because I'm reading from my living room, because the acoustics in my house, this is the best room, and because I can't afford a recording studio. I haven't done but three live readings in 25 years, so I'm rusty. So you're going to get what you get. You may hear my phone ring, and in the background, someone talk to my answer machine, car door slam outside, Harley Davidson, or some other bike race by. Hard to say. So it's probably going to be a little rough around the edges, though a really fine American pianist and sound engineer, Robbie Jeanette, will be editing this professionally. The only thing I can say is good luck, Robbie. And so I want all of you to, pretend you're just sitting here having a kickback time. I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to read an assortment of poems. I hope to bring some smiles, maybe some laughter to you. Maybe a tear for some poems. Maybe take you outside yourself to where you look at the world differently or yourself differently. Those that know me know I do not take myself very seriously, but I take what I do very seriously. That includes my writing, my painting, my poetry, and with each poem, I also may on occasion hit the pause, go grab myself a beer, go take a piss. It's just hard to say how this is going to play out. I've worked on some recordings earlier that Robbie may actually splice into this. That's going to be up to him. So I'm going to begin each poem with a title. I'm going to read it and try not to stumble too much. Like I say, I'm out of practice. So let's kick off with All the Old Outlaw Bikers. It seems like all the outlaw bikers I've known, going back to the 60s, have died or are dying. Not from gunshots from the law, wars with other 1%er clubs, or motorcycle accidents as they push their hogs to the limit, but from diabetes, watching their slow deaths, finger by finger, toe by toe. And I think the real cause of their diabetes is not the fact they all weigh 300 pounds or more, no matter how tall they are, they're all known as tiny, but because they must be cutting their speed with sugar. Catholics. The Catholic Church will never cease to amaze me, nor the poor bastards who flock to the religion like so many sheep. And I use the term poor bastards loosely, because the Catholic Church feeds off the poor of the world and go rich from their thievery. And on today's news, I learn one more lesson. Black smoke means no new pope. White smoke means, yes, they have a new pope. Today, the sky was filled with black smoke. Alas, alas. Talking to R.B. My first novel had just been published. My old lady of 5.5 years had left me the day before, so I had no one to share the moment with as I held a copy of it in my hands. My joy was empty of happiness. I got a hair up my ass and called Richard Brodigan. We had a conversation full of bullshit and laughter, though we did not know one another. We sounded like lifelong friends. I was very drunk. I'm pretty certain he wasn't exactly sober himself. White smoke. I see the Catholics were greeted with white smoke instead of black belching from the Vatican chimney today. a sign the cardinals had elected a new pope. Though at age 78, about the average life expectancy for a male, I don't see him hanging around very long. And the smoke spewing from a chimney, so symbolic to Catholics, seems very appropriate. After all, it is well documented the Vatican City Catholics assisted Nazi, Jew, and Gypsy killers. Avoid prosecution after World War II ended, obtaining them false passports and documentation and transportation to places like sunny Argentina. I am so glad the Catholics have kept their chimneys well stoked, and they still belch smoke. How reassuring that must be for the sorry bastards. I fell in love today. I fell in love today. Maureen, a tall drink of water, beautiful, shapely, personality, her long dress as she hiked just above her knees as she sat down. I could tell by her well-shaped calves that she had racehorse legs filled with thunder. When she caught me looking at her legs, she smiled as only a beautiful woman with no ego or vanity can. When she stood and walked, her body absolutely shimmered beneath her long blue dress. That smelled of summer, and days when I was younger. The dress reminded me of the tropics, but not Hawaii. Somewhere more exotic. And I made her laugh a woman's laugh with something I said. Yes, I fell in love today, but I know damn well she didn't. Angola Prison Blues. Angola Prison, parchment farm in Mississippi, is not a place to be sentenced. Angola Prison is located in Louisiana, and this is Angola Prison Blues. The sounds of a song bring back painful memories I try to shut out but can't. The feeling of complete sadness. Reliving the past, I try to pave over it. The sun falls off the edge of my life. I run after it but can't catch it. I hear the familiar sound of a lonesome whistle. Did I really escape the bloodhounds, the trackers, and sadistic guards in the swamps and bayous? Angola Prison, no place for a man to be. I hop the train as it races to a destination unknown to me. Did I really kill that man over New Orleans? Darkness claims the life of another day and wraps me in its cold arms, taking me deep inside the clammy coffins where so many try to sleep. Cemeteries of lost souls have no recollection of their past journeys. Angola Prison, a place so bad the devil won't go near it. Another day creeps in and plucks the stars from the moonless night as a hard rain begins to fall, driving me into the abyss. A borrowed dime spinning in the air. Heads or tails? His bad luck. It happened in Nam. We crossed paths unexpectedly. I was behind enemy lines. He wasn't aware of that small detail since I was on recon. Poor bastard. Not much older than me. I was 20, so he might have even been younger. Taking a morning shit when I came across him. Probably smoking a cigarette. I don't remember. But I slit his throat before he could reach for his weapon. Dead before he could even wipe his ass. Biker Easter 2010. The rumble of Harley shook the sun from its morning slumber. Hippie Frank drank Bloody Marys with retarded Rosie. J.J. Solari drank the blood of civilians who unwittingly stumbled into a world alien to them. The world of 1% bikers, also known as outlaws. His dinner guest was Zombie Jesus. Yankee Bob the prospect and not the prophet stole all the kids' candy. Queen Dean shot and killed the Easter Bunny and served it fried to his kids and grandkids. And Arkansas Amy laid a large, multicolored egg on the White House lawn. Outside, for Lucinda. Outside my windows, a symphony played all day and into the night. Soft rain with some thunder throughout the day, ending as night brought stars, dancing across the skies where lightning had played until the last rumble of thunder played its final note. As if on cue, a bullfrog began playing stand-up bass. The sound of crickets joined him with the sweet sound of their violins. In a tree outside my bedroom window, a mockingbird began singing a medley of songs. It was the most unusual yet beautiful symphony I have ever heard in my life. Sadly, there was no one here to share it with. Seeking religion. I tripped as I left the tavern. I was falling down drunk and realized I needed to find God and religion. As I said, I was very much under the influence. So I caught the next train and tap-danced my way to the club car for a soda, where I met a young lady cut from the same cloth as I was. When she asked me where I was going, I told her to the tabernacle in Tucumcari to find God and religion and give up my sinful ways. She derailed me, the train, and me by spiking my soda and dropping acid in the engineer's coffee while telling me we were on the same path together, and she would show me the way, which was to a tabernacle in Tucson she owned. That turned out to be an all-nude bar filled with goddesses, and she was the queen, and it was there where I found the true love of my life and my kind of religion raining down upon me. Uptown Man, Blues Poem 1. I got a shark skin suit, pocket watch and fob, alligator skin shoes, and a fancy fedora cocked real low over one eye. I carry a straight razor, cross my path or mess with my women, cut you real quick. Got a million-dollar smile, drives women wild, and knocks them to their knees. Don't need no fancy car, got a long limo and driver at my beck and call. Got enough money in my wallet to burn the Big Easy down and build her back up again. Got a private jet to fly us on up to Harlem and back down to the Big Easy when she's breathing again. I got a pistol in my pocket, one hand high on your thigh. My pistol's cocked and fully loaded, and it has a long barrel. They call me King all over town. But tonight, baby, gonna lay you down, fill you full of bullets, show you a real good time. When the morning light comes over the ground, gonna reload my gun and show you another good time. 'Cause you're my fine-ass woman, and I'm your uptown man. The Blind Leading the Blind. I was assistant manager of a shoe store in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. Yes, I've held down some shitty jobs to support my writing and painting. I even worked at a factory that built fiberglass shithouses, you know, like Andy Gump's. Anyway, one afternoon, Tom and I had just closed the store, and as we stood outside and he locked the door, Tom was the manager, and as said, I was the assistant manager. I heard a tap, tap, tapping across the street, looked over and watched a blind man leading two other blind men at a fast-paced walk, their canes making the tapping noise in the pavement. There was a school for the blind along with the University of Illinois and a nursing school in Champaign-Urbana as well. And I realized it was an instructor from the school for the blind leading two students on a confidence-building walk. I nudged Tom, and as we watched them disappear around the corner, I said, I always wondered what they meant about the blind leading the blind, and now I know. He mumbled and said, you're a warped motherfucker. I resemble that remark, I replied. Let's go drink a few beers. Okay, he said. Shall we let them lead the way, I ask? taxi driver from Tucson. Told you I was rusty. I returned from Nam, and my wife divorced me, so I bought a hog, and somehow ended upside down in Tucson, living with a Mexican girl who was trying to teach me Spanish, while I drove a taxi in Tucson. The girl and I smoked Bull Durham and cheap Mexican weed, drank mucho tequila, and fornicated every chance we got in the back of my cab. I never did learn Spanish, and though I had 3 poems published in English in 1968, I didn't claim to be a poet. I was just a nombit driving a taxi in Tucson while living with a Mexican girl who was trying to teach me Spanish. Then I heard some of the literate editors were going to publish a book of my poetry, and I still didn't claim to be a poet. The Mexican girl got pregnant, and against my wishes, I wanted to be a part of bringing life into the world after taking it away in Nam, insisted on going down to Nogales for an abortion. So I once again mounted my hog and headed north until I reached Frisco, where I continued to write and publish poetry. But I still don't claim to be a poet, and I never will until I discover where all these words come from. Where the hell do they come from? Anyway, hope you're enjoying yourselves. In memory of Todd Moore, I did not know him personally, only through his words. Words I could relate to. A poet only a few years longer in the wooden keg than I had been, being aged to perfection. The right taste, the words as smooth as Tennessee sour mash, rolling off his tongue, twinkling eyes full of mischief, perhaps, or just plain ornery thoughts dancing in his mind. But I do a drawing to go with one of his poems in the Book of Jack, just before his sudden, unexpected death. A table with a shot glass, bloodied $10 bill, and appropriately enough, a smoking snub-nosed .38 revolver. The smoke-filled words leading up the stairway to heaven from the smoking gun. Mickey Mouse and the Mormons. I heard yesterday that Marie Osmond's son committed suicide. I don't remember who the messenger was, but I asked if he did it because he discovered his Uncle Donnie was his father. I think it would make sense, since Mormons believe a man should have as many wives as his dick can handle, not to mention his wallet. So why not fuck your sister? I mean, the Mormons kind of seem like a cult, at least to me. Makes me wonder if the Mickey Mouse Club was a cult, or maybe even Mormons. I know the female Mouseketeers had a cult following consisting of sailors when I served with Naval Amphibious Forces, because I was one of them. And the Mickey Mouse Club was our favorite TV show because we liked to watch Annette and Darlene and the other female dancers twirl as they dance, son. Sometimes giving us a flash of thigh and white panties that gave horny sailors boners as we served in defense of our country. Annette ended up advertising peanut butter with her kids after getting too old for Walt. And after seeing them and getting to know J.J. Solari, also a former Mouseketeer and now a demented biker and perverted writer, I think he might have been the father. Now that we know what happened to Annette, and that J.J. is demented and perverted like most biker writers, including myself, are, I might as well tell you what happened to Darlene, and it is not good news. It might have been a combination of midlife crisis and menopause that caused her to do what she did, but she was arrested more than once for shoplifting and other crimes. Or maybe she was having flashbacks to her days as a Mouseketeer, where it is possible J.J. corrupted her by getting her high on drugs and taking her virginity and maybe knocking her up and insisting she have an abortion, scarring her for life and leading her to a life of crime that did it. As I write this, I am now convinced that Mouseketeers were Mormons, that J.J. Solari is a Jack Mormon, who somehow slipped into the female Mouseketeers and robbed them of their innocence. I am now also convinced that J.J. Solari possibly fathered Marie Osmond's son and learning this prompted him to commit suicide. That makes more sense to me. Because Uncle Donnie might be a homosexual, like my Uncle Donnie was. And I think J.J. Solari owes the Osmond family an apology and should be banned from Disney World for the rest of his natural-born life. The Visitor. She was a young artist from New Orleans and had seen my paintings in some long-ago forgotten art gallery while still a high school student. It was in the French Quarter, she remembered it. As I said, it was long ago and forgotten by me. Somehow she found me on the internet. Many years had passed. We shared pictures and chatted online and talked on the telephone. She was young, younger than my two children, which didn't bother me at all. Some of the pictures she sent me were nude photos of herself, and I liked her body and most of all her hard nipples. Well, yes, I must confess her pussy intrigued me the most. And her voice, southern and sultry, hot, hot, like a southern belle's voice should sound. Tabasco sauce and mint juleps never sounded so good. Humidity and sweat, dripping sweat, hot, hot. One day she said she wanted to come visit me in California where I now lived. And though she would share my bed, there would be no sex. It seems she had a new boyfriend and that she might be on her period while visiting me. But that we could sleep in the nude and cuddle if I liked. Yes, yes, hot, hot. And I said, okay. I wasn't afraid of new boyfriends and blood did not bother me. Not after Nam. Yes, yes, hot, hot. I did not bother to tell her that I had also earned my red wings while riding with a motorcycle club. Probably while she was still in high school, admiring my art in that long-ago, forgotten gallery in New Orleans. Nor that if she was on her period, that her blood would simply be more paint on the canvas of my sheets. Yes, yes, hot, hot. We had a very good visit, and my art will soon be shown again in some long-ago forgotten gallery in New Orleans. And she will never experience another period like that time she came to me to visit in California. Yes, yes, hot, hot. Nor will I ever forget that visit. Yes, yes, hot, hot. But not nearly humid enough to suit me. Women of history, or with the history. Instead of the apple, I ate Eve. I shaved Delilah's pussy and took away her strength. I spurned Cleopatra's advances and fucked Medusa instead. I'm the one who chopped off Marie Antoinette's head because she refused to give me a blowjob. Then I fucked the Queen of Sheba in the ass while picturing Raquel Darien's sweet and sassy ass. I opened Pandora's box and didn't like what I saw, so I closed it and silenced Nicole Richie by sticking my cock inside her simple life. Now I'd like to spend a night in a skanky Paris Hilton, if someone can only get me a reservation. And I am going to take a pause. I'm back. Bukowski and me. Like Bukowski was, I'm a beer-drinking machine. I think I'm even beginning to get his great white whale belly. I also like 1800 and Jack Daniels. Crown Royal ain't bad either. Also like Bukowski did so fucking well, I attract bad women. Drunks, junkies, whores, thieving cunts who will leave you when someone else with more money or lies to better feed their addictions and habits comes along. Catholic girls gone bad, and Baptist ministers' daughters are particularly fond of me. Unlike Bukowski, I am not a great poet, but I'm damn good sometimes. And as long as I can tread water, the words will flow. just how things are with me today. I walk head down into a fierce wind that cuts through my soul like well-honed straight razors. Flash back in my father's barber shop and whip my bare ass with the strop. My belly has quit growling and left me in hunt of food. My right hand has fallen off, ashamed of the killing it has done, not to mention the begging for enough money for a bottle of cheap Tokay. My past is tired of nipping at my heels like some angry dog, and will go for the throat before sundown. The vultures circle overhead, descending with each step I take, knowing it will be their time soon. Paul Bear. In America, I don't know about anywhere else, when somebody's buried, the casket is carried from the hearse, well, from the funeral home to the hearse, then the hearse to the grave, and they're called pallbearers. And this poem is called Paul Bear. My maternal grandfather had died, and as oldest grandson, I was, of course, chosen to be a pallbearer. Not that I cared to be. My daughter was 2, but well-spoken for her age, and not unlike her mother in many ways. But of course she had no conception of what death was. The day of the funeral, she kept giving me these strange looks, like maybe I'd picked the wrong tie or something. As said, she was like her mother in many ways. Finally, on the day of the burial, as services were being held, with her arms folded across her chest and several glaring glances directed my way, much like looks I had received from her mother many times, she blurted out, "I thought you were supposed to be a polar bearer." "No," I whispered in her ear, "a pallbearer." "Then why aren't you dressed up to look like a polar bear?" she demanded to know. By then, many in attendance were tittering in spite of the solemnity of the moment. "I am," I replied. "That's why I'm wearing a suit and tie." "Polar bears don't wear a suit and tie," she snorted. "Sometimes they do," I whispered. This time, with her arms still folded across her chest, but even tighter now, she said, "Buddy, you have some explaining to do when we get home." I'd heard that same thing many times over and over from her mother, and I knew I had some explaining to do the minute we were in the car driving home. Easter Sunday. I confess I had a sinful Saturday night that carried over till Easter Sunday. When dawn rose from her sleep, I did not drink alone. A sure sign, they say, of an alcoholic. But gave myself much-needed Holy Communion. A large, spicy Bloody Mary as I feasted on the bread of retarded Rosie's ample breast, who had spent Saturday night in sin with me. With gleeful innocence that turned into childish delight after communion when she discovered the 2 Easter eggs in the basket of my scrotum. And again, I think I'll spare you and take a break. I'm back again. I think I'm going to close off here with some poems. I read a couple earlier. My chat book called Piss on the Pope and the Protestants Too. Cannon fodder. During the Vietnam War, the average age of a soldier was 19. During World War II, it was something like 26. The general soon learned the younger ones were better because they took more chances, too young to know they were not immortal. And they were dubbed Westmoreland's cannon fodder. For some unexplained reason, the Catholics have become fodder for my canons, maybe because of all the attention the church has been getting from all the priestly pedophiles they have nurtured and protected over the years. the death of John Paul II, and secret cardinal ballots to elect the new pope. I really don't know why my canon sights are set on them. I have no reason to dislike Catholics, though they did ruin two relationships I was in with two members of their flock. Confused children of the Catholic Church, I call them children, even though both were old enough to be called women. But I was a heathen in the church's eyes, as a divorced father of two. And the Catholic Church effectively canceled out those relationships. Of course, I probably sped things along, being the heathen I am. Pan. You can take the Christians, Jews, Islams, Muslims, and most other organized religions, especially the Catholics and their pedophiles, who all kill, claiming it in their minds, that is God's will, and shove them up the Pope's sick ass. Buddhism I greet with open arms, as long as it is in, but I have chosen to follow the pipes and paths of Pan. Living dangerously. I'd known her for years, an intimidating woman to most men, including me, until I'd spent a tour in Nam. We were in a bar one night. She was sitting at a table behind me and my friends. I turned, tapped her on her shoulder, and said, "I'm not like most men, Sue." And she asked, "What do you mean?" I must confess I was very drunk. "They just want to fuck you," I replied, "and I just want to eat you." I turned my back to my drink before she could say anything. And I tapped on the shoulder again and told her I owed her an apology because I had lied to her. "What do you mean?" she asked. "I'd want to fuck you after I ate you," I replied, telling her the truth this time. Ended at the elbow. I was managing a bar, and one of the regulars and I became friends, mostly because we had two things in common. We both loved loose women and the blues. He asked me if I'd like to join him one night and go to a blues bar he'd stumbled across in the San Fernando Valley, on Reseda, just off 101. Said the guitar player would blow my fucking mind. It was a small bar, and we found seats 5 feet from the stage. The singer and leader of the band played the harp and was decent enough as he showed off his shit before the rest of the band joined him. The fucking guitarist's right arm ended at the elbow, little finger-like nubs growing from it. A birth defect. I watched those little nubs on his right elbow bring his guitar to life as his left hand rode the rails of its frets until a sound of broken hearts and lost orgasms filled the bar. And lastly, I should have called this poem, it's called Easter Poem, but I actually should have called it Good Friday on hindsight, but it was published as Easter Poem. I don't know why it's taken me all these years to wonder why they call the day Christ was crucified Good Friday. I don't think Jesus would have. Hell, he's probably up there nailed to the cross muttering to himself, "God, what a way to start off a weekend." And on that note, I will spare you, listeners. I hope you've enjoyed your time here in my living room. Robbie, I hope you can salvage something from this. And to my good friends in The Hague, the Netherlands, Renee and Sylvia, this is Fred saying, hope you enjoy, and thank you for being my friends. I've actually decided to read one more poem, try to do a better job than I have. This one is called Sister Mary Fuck. I met her in San Francisco and Like I say, I told you I'm very rusty. I apologize. But what the hell? We're in my living room and we're having a good time. Have yourself a beer. I met her in San Francisco in Golden Gate Park during the so-called Summer of Love. She said her name was Sister Mary Fuck, a devout nun. But it wasn't J.C. or his dad God who popped her cherry, but another nun in the order. She didn't say what order. With supple fingers and a tongue shaped with lust, not to mention a collection of sex toys that the priest of the parish often borrowed to please the young altar boys or plaid-skirted schoolgirls on very rare occasions, since they preferred the younger boys. Sister Mary Fuck took me to bed that night and taught me the meaning of religion. Taught me the meaning of religion by showing me how to fondle her rosary beads while eating her pussy.